Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. As a nation, we are faced with pervasive cyber threats. Malicious actors, including those at the nation-state level, are motivated by a variety of reasons that include espionage, political and ideological beliefs, and financial gain. The U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, and its National Protection Programs Directorate works to assist federal agencies to understand and manage cyber risk, reduce the frequency and impact of cyber incidents, and readily identify network security issues and take action. What are DHS's key cyber and communication priorities? What is the mission of the National Cyber and Communication Integration Center, NCIC? And how is DHS building capacity to accelerate the sharing of cyber threat information? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Dr. Phyllis Schneck, Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications within the National Protection and Programs Directorate within the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. All right, Phyllis, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me today.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Melinda Balthrop. And Melinda, as always, welcome.
Thank you.
So, Phyllis, before we delve into specific initiatives, perhaps you can outline the mission and continuing evolution of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's National Protection and Programs Directorate, also known as NPPD. How does it work, and how do you work with the other components of DHS?
So I'll give you the official mission first. So the National Protection and Programs Directorate of the Department of Homeland Security, the mission is to lead the national effort to secure and enhance the resilience of the nation's infrastructure against cyber and physical threats. And that's very important because as we go forward under the vision of my boss, Undersecretary Suzanne Spaulding, we look at all threats and the consequences. When something happens, for example, you may not know if it's a cyber or a kinetic cause, we have to mitigate that. We have to have been prepared in advance. We have to know who to call. We have to understand the specific sector, whether it's water, electricity, or communications. And then there may be cyber and other things in there. But our directorate focuses from the Office of Infrastructure Protection, from the Office of Intelligence and Analysis, so putting together everything we know. Even our Federal Protective Service, the ladies and gentlemen that protect our federal facilities across the country, these are your eyes and ears that work with the Office of Cybersecurity and Communications that's under me to look at how do we protect in advance people and machines and infrastructure so that when, not if, but when something happens, we're able to mitigate that quickly, keep you online, and go forward.
Wonderful. And I actually want to talk about your office and specifically, what is your role and responsibility as a Deputy Undersecretary for Cybersecurity and Communications within NPPD? What areas are under your purview?
So it's a long title with multiple responsibilities. First of all, as a deputy, I need to be a good deputy to the Undersecretary, Suzanne Spaulding. I am her deputy for cybersecurity and communications. We have another deputy, Dr. Ron Clark, that looks at the other parts of the directorate. But for me, it means two things at the highest level. One is making sure that for the directorate, our cyber mission is always running fully and always integrated fully in the Undersecretary's vision of, again, how to enhance our resilience against physical and cyber threats. Secondly, it's to oversee our entire cybersecurity and communications operation. So under me is, and I'm so proud that we were able to recruit Dr. Andy Osment to be the Assistant Secretary to oversee the Office specifically of Cybersecurity and Communications. And that has all of our programs that we can talk about, whether it's the Einstein Program, the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation. It has our NCIC, our National Cybersecurity and Communications Integration Center. It has all of our partnerships, so people talking to people, sharing science and knowledge, building relationships. So again, we know who to call, we know whose understanding is where, and certainly, and maybe most importantly, our Office of Emergency Communications. If you can't connect, you can't share information. And that's what we're protecting, our connections and our way of life. So all of that operationally, as well as the partnerships, comes under my purview, as well as understanding how we work with the cyber mission in each of the other different areas under Secretary Johnson's unity of effort throughout the department, whether it's the Transportation Security Administration, whether it's FEMA or science and technology or policy or an intelligence and analysis or a broad range, our law enforcement parts, Secret Service and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and specifically the cyber parts in there, Homeland Security investigations. So how do we work together as a department with a clear, impactful cyber vision?
So with such an expansive portfolio, what are your top, say, three challenges that you face, and have you sought to address those challenges?
So I'm going to give you my top three priorities, okay, because those lead to the challenges. Yes. Number one is building trust. Trust with our stakeholders, and I consider them customers, mm-hmm, whether that's the federal, civilian government. We mitigate cyber risk, cyber threat, and response. So that's our responsibility across federal, civilian government, and private sector. And my first priority therein for those customers is building their trust so that they will share with us an event, because every time we learn something, we can use that to protect so many others, and so that they will trust us to come in and clean up an event with our experts. And trust is also a challenge, as you know, in this environment. I hear from my private sector colleagues, and I know from my experience, there's never been a harder time to share information or even in some cases internationally be affiliated with the U.S. government as a private company. But there's also never been a more urgent time to put information together, to put knowledge together, to connect the dots, to have that resilience in our infrastructures, both cyber and physical. So that's both a priority of mine, to build that trust, top priority, and a challenge. My second priority has been building situational awareness. And that means every time we protect something, we should learn from that event and use that to push back out most as rapidly as possible into the federal, civilian government and private sector, using people and machines. And I believe we'll talk further, but DHS has pioneered the ability for machines to talk to machines about what they're seeing in cyberspace. So understanding how we can have a situational awareness of what's happening in cyber right now so that we can protect and mitigate and respond to events, whether machines tell us or people tell us, as quickly as possible. And again, I can flip that back and say that's an enormous challenge. We are widely interconnected. We face an adversary that has plenty of money and no lawyers. They have absolutely nothing to protect, and they execute with amazing alacrity. We are building that same alacrity. We have to overcome the asymmetry because we are protecting a way of life. And if we don't protect our privacy and civil liberties and our infrastructure, then we're not in the right business. So we have to do multiple work efforts to accomplish that resilience, and we will get there, but it's both a priority and a challenge. The third, of course, is leveraging the cybersecurity framework that comes to us from President's Executive Order 13636. 3 winters ago, it was released in, I believe, February of 2014, a few months after I took this job. In the first few months of the framework's development, I was on the private sector side. So I saw and contributed to sending top scientists to that effort to work with NIST, to a National Institute for Standards and Technology, to work with DHS, to put together the best of security practices so that we can, and again, this is my priority, take the subject of cybersecurity once and for all to the boardroom. This is not what should be left in the IT budget after you get a fancy printer. This is something that your CEO needs to understand, so it's something in which they can invest and look at risk and consequences and not simply how much money do we put toward the IT staff. And I believe using this framework has helped us to get these messages across in an executive way, as well as to give both state and local and small to medium business something from which to work in best practices in cyber so that we can not only simplify it for them to use and be safer, but also get it to hundreds of thousands of boardrooms across the country and hopefully across the world.
Would you tell us more about your career path and what brought you to your current leadership role?
So I was introduced to computers when I was about 3. My father was at NASA. I'm not that old, but I had a Silent 700 in my room that appeared to me to type by itself with a phone that most kids today wouldn't recognize plugged into the back of it. My father taught me a lot about computer science, and my mother taught me the rest of life. Well, my degrees and my core work from college and graduate school is in high-performance computing and in cryptography and how to combine those. So looking at, going forward and the result of many summer jobs, I ended up doing two things simultaneously. One is having a startup that was bought that led me to a role in a much larger company as a chief technology officer for all of the worldwide public sector activities. So that not only meant product design, but it meant policy work. Yeah. It meant my first experiences testifying on the Hill, which was quite an honor. It also meant I ran for 8 years, most of my adult life, the FBI's InfraGuard program to build partnerships to help local and regional, state and local and normal citizens make friends, get acquainted with those who are experts in their sector and those in law enforcement, whether it be state, local, or federal, that could help them respond in case, which is the same tenet we have in NPPD. Mm-hmm. Know where you're going to call, know your risks and consequences. And we grew that agency, that nonprofit organization, from I'd say about 2,000 people when I took over as national chairman to, I think, 33 or 34,000 when I left. And I believe it's still going strong today. What led me into government was twofold. One was the phone call from Undersecretary Spaulding saying, would you consider this? And the other was an opportunity to really combine all the things that I liked about all those different areas, to do technology, to do policy, and to jump into something new with a whole new team. And I've never looked back, no regrets, and it's a great adventure.
Well, Phyllis, with your experience in both the private and public sectors, how would you compare and contrast the management and leadership challenges faced in the private sector with those faced in the government? And can you describe the leadership traits and characteristics needed to address these unique challenges?
That's a big question. When I thought about this first, I thought that in the private sector, we are driven by quarterly returns mm-hmm. in a large company, and your bottom line is money. Mm-hmm. Your money comes from doing a mission. In government, every day, our bottom line is our mission, and we simply need money to support it. So it's a little bit flipped. Yeah. That's how I look at it. I think that the challenges and traits needed to address these, it's all about people. Mm-hmm. Right. So my background's technology, but as is many of the experts that work for Office of Cybersecurity and Communications at DHS. However, this is about making our work fun. Our mission is hard. Our mission is something that attracts a lot of people because it is hard, but it is doable. People love a challenge. But creating a workplace where we support people's career path forward, where just because we can't pay you amount that you might get somewhere else in a private company, I've seen from people and I know from experience and those with whom I work, we're not driven by money. We're driven by the ability to make a real difference and a real impact. And leadership in this area, it's the most important thing you can do is help everybody use their expertise in their way to be part of that impact. And that goes to morale, it goes to workplace, it goes to workforce and how we can do better hiring, how we, Secretary Johnson and I, went and visited universities, right, and spoke to graduate students, whether they were in master's programs, PhD programs, even a few undergrads, looked at their research, talked about what mattered to them. We want to hire the best and the brightest, and to me, that's what's most important right now for our mission.
What are DHS's cybersecurity and communications priorities? We will ask Dr. Phyllis Schneck when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.